Let me go ahead and introduce our speaker today. Greg is a very, very busy person, as you'll see by the bio, and he'll share how he pulls all that off here. So take good notes, and in case you think you've got a honey-do list, wait till you hear what he's doing. But no, I'm kidding. Greg is a state senator, businessman, and entrepreneur. He serves as Georgia State Senator, 27th District, and is vice chair of the Science and Technology Committee and on four other committees, at least it was on your website, the government website there. He's an owner and board member for Forsyth-based Catalyst Nutraceuticals, a nutraceutical manufacturing company focusing on supplementation for athletes and health-minded individuals. He's also created jobs as a partner in Forsyth-based Renewed Vision, a technology company serving thousands of clients around the world, including Disney, the Smithsonian, the NFL, the Atlanta Falcons, Celebrity Cruises, the Salvation Army, Mercedes-Benz, and more. Greg formerly worked as creative director for 722, a Bible study at North Point Community Church led by Louis Giglio. From there, Greg spent 11 years on the road serving as tour manager for a musician, Chris Tomlin, and currently serves as a producer for Passion City Church and team leader and producer for Passion Conferences, the largest collegiate gathering of its kind in the world. Greg was founding member of Fix Forsyth Traffic and has led the fight to protect Forsyth County's quality of life. He's also served on the planning on the Forsyth Planning Commission, Comprehensive Plan Steering Committee, Impact Fee Committee, and Transportation Plan Steering Committee. Greg and his wife, Natalie, a graduate of Forsyth Central High School, have been married for 11 years and have four children, and I'm pretty sure Greg doesn't play a lot of golf, but you never know. Please welcome Greg Dolezal.
Good morning. It's true. I used to have a life. It was amazing. I used to play golf. Used to get to hang out with my friends. And I'm jealous looking out here. Does anybody have a tea time today? Anybody? Nobody? Let's get a feel for who's in the room. How many of y'all, at our table, we had a lot of first timers. How many of y'all, this is your first Polo men's breakfast?
Awesome.
That's amazing. How many of you guys have been around about as long as Hines has been around at the Polo men's breakfast? How many people live in Polo? How many people live in Victory? So I live just up the road from y'all. I live in Victory Springs, just right across Midway Park. I've been in Forsyth County since 2006. My wife is a rare thing here in the county. She's a native. She grew up here, went to a high school here. She actually started and sold a business here herself as well. She owned a hair salon right across the street from the Collection, if you know where the Starbucks is. She was there. So we're kind of living and breathing life here for a long time. We've got four kids, two of which attend Vickery Elementary, a second grader and a kindergartner. So thank you for paying your taxes and educating my children. Look forward to it. Those of you on the other side of that, appreciate that. I think it's an interesting thing when men gather. And men have a unique role in culture and society. I'm so old-fashioned enough to believe that there are two genders. That they are men and women. That's a radical idea now, by the way, if you weren't paying attention. But I think we're created uniquely, and we're gifted uniquely. And there's a special calling on being a man, and there's a special calling on being a woman. And each of those have their place, I think, in our culture, and I think in God's kingdom. But it's interesting, when men gather, there's two questions that are asked. The first question is, what's your name? And the second question is,
what do you do?
And it's funny because Hines gave me a format of what to talk about today, and I'll just tell you the format. My background and my career path, my transition, what am I doing now, what have I learned, and then current activities. So even what I'm going to talk about today centers around this idea of what we do. And I hope to inject a little bit of a different tone into the conversation this morning. I've got 20 minutes, so I'm not going to have a ton of time to do that. But I want to inject a little bit more of an idea that transcends what we do, that gets to who we are, right? Because ultimately, I think that it's very easy, especially in America, and especially in a wealthy community that we all live in, it's very easy to go through life being defined by none other than what you do, what you haven't achieved or what you have achieved, who you've married or who you've divorced, how well your kids are doing, what school your kids are going to. And if you go through life in that rhythm, and I've been caught up in that trap probably as much as anybody in the room, But if we go through life in that way, I think it is so easy to get to the end of life and have missed everything that we've been placed on planet Earth for, and be lost even at the end of what looks like to the outside world a very complete life. So I'll tell you a little bit of my background, and then what I've learned and what I'm doing and all of that. But I want to inject a couple of bits of truth in that they're a lot older than me, and that were around before any of us were around. And I'm a follower of Christ, and I know this is an apolitical, religious meeting, but I'm going to inject truth that I think could be relevant to you no matter where you are in your faith journey, and no matter where you are in your political beliefs. We're not really going to get into politics, I don't think, too much this morning. So Heinz really gave my background, but I get up every day and go to a job at a software development company called Renewed Vision. We write software that's used by churches and houses of worship and Disney and the NFL and the United States Congress and the Smithsonian and Gulfstream Jets and Delta Airlines and Mercedes-Benz, and I could kind of go on and on with that list. It's amazing because we stumbled into what we do. We started our business in 2005. In 2005, I told the guys at my table this morning, these didn't exist, so life was better. And we were, I think a lot of us were a lot less in the comparison trap that we find ourselves in today. But in 2005, really, there was this change that was happening with technology. Things were beginning to move faster. The internet was now kind of widely adopted. You could carry a computer in your car, which is a radical idea. You had, prior to these, you had the flip phone, but a generation prior to that, you had the bag phone. You know, if you were really hip, you were walking around with the bag phone with the antenna on it and doing deals. But we saw a need in the church. I was working at North Point Community Church at the time, and churches were kind of abandoning or really beginning to embrace technology. And a lot of them were stepping away from, you know, kind of your traditional pew and hymnal vibe, right? So there was a need for software in the church that would facilitate worship services in a better way than what PowerPoint was. And so we built our software called Purpose Center. And we were working in a basement. So it was a typical tech startup story. Worked in a basement, didn't know if we were going to make it. Had to borrow $50,000 to get the business started. And went without salaries and did the whole deal. About 2005, it became 2010, it became pretty clear to us that we were on to something. Fast forward to today, of the 100 largest churches in America, 99 of them use our product. We serve about 70,000 churches in America, and there's only 300,000 total. We think there's about 130 or 140 that would even use a software like ours. So we've got good market saturation in the church, but outside the church, something flipped for us in 2012. The Olympics came to us and said, we'd like to explore using your software at every venue at the London Olympics. And we knew that we were being used in places outside the church, but this is the biggest stage in the world, literally. And we were nervous. We were, at the time, a small software company of about maybe 8 or 9 people. And we end up doing the Olympics. We've done every venue at every Olympics since then. So 2012, 14, 16, 18. London, Rio, Pyeongchang, and Sochi in Russia. We've done a couple of Super Bowls. We just finished our third NFL draft in April. And we did all of that without an outside sales guy. We've never made an outbound sales call in the history of the company. It's dumb. It's not a good thing. I wouldn't recommend it necessarily. But we've kind of stumbled our way into the control room at CNN or Children's Healthcare of Atlanta or the Georgia Dome, where a lot of places our software is being used. And that gets to really what I want to point to you guys is one of my life verses. What I say is my life verse, but there's two verses I want to read to you all this morning. But it's Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, which has been really a cornerstone for me, whether it's been in my marriage, whether it's been in business, whether it's been in deciding to get into politics, which was not a strategic decision at all. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. And there's a lot of truth packaged up in that. But I think for anybody who's type A, and anybody who's driven, and anybody who kind of yearns for significance, which I think at the heart of every man in this room is a longing for significance, right? I've got it. I think you've got it. Maybe you're not type A. I am. It's not always a good thing because it's led to stress and anxiety in my life. But it's this idea of trusting, not in your own ability. And I think that from a young age, now culturally, you know, we're taught to lean on ability, and we're taught to lean on our own understanding and our own wisdom. If you come from a worldview that recognizes that there's a wisdom that supersedes your own wisdom, and there's a sovereign power that supersedes your own, it's really a freeing thing. And so I've seen that in my business, and we never endeavored to land where we've landed today. And in fact, if you would have told me 15 years ago that Greg, you had this company serve 70,000 organizations, do the Olympics, the Super Bowl, the NFL draft, would you trade me today for that? Would you take that? 10 years ago, I would have said absolutely. But I walk into my business every day, even now, thinking not about, wow, this is amazing, I want to celebrate what we've achieved. I think about, I want to double our revenue. I want to grow from 30 employees to 50 employees. I want to go do this buyout or that buyout or that, you know, make that deal. And so it's a daily check for me to not lean on my own understanding, but to trust in the Lord, and then to trust that my path will be directed. And I couldn't have told you at 25 years old, but I can tell you at 40 years old, that my path has been directed. I moved here to go to Emory Law School, took the LSATs, got into Northwestern in Illinois, where I'm from, and got into Emory here. And I decided to go live in Atlanta for 6 months. And if I like Atlanta, I'll go to Emory. If I don't like it, I'll come back and go to Northwestern. So I was on this lawyer path. Never thought I'd be doing what I'm doing today. But looking back now, I can see a sovereign hand over my life that has directed a path in a way that I never thought was possible. Heinz mentioned Catalyst Nutraceuticals. The bio's a little bit old. 3 years ago, we started another company, some other friends of mine, which is called Catalyst Nutraceuticals, and I sold the business in March, so the bio's a little bit dated, but we do nutraceutical manufacturing. So if you work out like Josh Shaw here and you're ripped in the gym when I see him there, and you're taking a pre-workout powder or protein supplement, we're making stuff like that. Or if you're watching Dr. Oz, and maybe you're in your sunset years of life, and Dr. Oz has convinced you to take Garcinia and turmeric and 50 other different herbs, we encapsulate those herbs. So that business exploded. We sold to a private equity group in March. I think we're going to do a 200,000 square foot facility, currently employ about 125 people. And again, that was a path-directed thing, something we never thought would happen when we started the business at a Christmas party a couple of years ago. I had the opportunity, in the midst of all of that, starting in 2005, I got a phone call from a friend of mine named Chris Tomlin, who at the time was a kind of a young, fledgling, up-and-coming musician. And he said, Greg, I'm about to go on my first tour. I'd like you to tour manage for me. So, Chris, I have no idea what that means, but I'd love to do it. I'd never been on the road. I've been around production, but never been on the road. And that began, for me, an almost 12-year journey of tour managing and leading some of the largest tours in the world. So we started playing in small venues, churches. We started with a bus and a trailer and about 8 of us. My last concert with him, I was telling some guys earlier, was in 2015. It was a sold-out concert at Madison Square Garden in New York, the most famous venue in the world. So we really kind of ran the gamut from hopes and dreams to seeing hopes and dreams fulfilled. And again, I had a front row seat to seeing paths being directed. We went all over the world, played concerts and everywhere from the O2 Arena in London to Sydney, Australia, and New Zealand, and Kampala, Uganda, and Africa. And if you're old enough to remember the Thrilla in Manila, the old boxing match. We had a concert in the same venue as the Thrilla in Manila. So I've had a lot of opportunity to do a lot of things. My wife and I got married in 2007. It's the best decision I made. Didn't know how wise of a decision I made even at the time. But we've got 4 kids and are really enjoying life. 2015, I got a phone call from Sherry Gilligan. And she had ran the year before against a former Polo resident in politics, Mark Hamilton. Anybody know Mark Hamilton?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Mark was a state rep, and Mark beat Sherry. But Mark served out the first year of a 2-year term and then resigned midterm to move to Tennessee to take his business to Tennessee. And Sherry called me and said, Greg, I think you should run for the seat. If you do, I'll support you. If you don't, I think I'm going to run. My wife and I spent about 5 days praying about it, seeking counsel, literally going into a closet and getting on my knees, because I don't think that doing something like that is something you should do out of ambition. I think that's something you should do out of calling. And we did not have a peace about it. And it was crazy, because the special election is a short election. So if somebody resigns midterm, you have a special election 6 weeks later. So it would have been a six-week campaign. It would have been easy, I think. And it would have been a lot less expensive than what I ended up doing. But we didn't sense a calling to do that. And didn't know why at the time, but said no to it. Fast forward a couple years later, about 3 years later, our state senator decides to run for governor. And Michael Williams is his name. And we had the same process, sought counsel, prayed about it, felt a very clear calling to run for the seat. And I was very clear to tell people in the process that we prayed about this and we think God has called us to run. I don't think that necessarily means God has called us to win. Mm-hmm. And I was very open to the possibility in that journey that that journey might have been not about serving as a senator, but might have been about the process of running for the Senate. And ran a year and a half long campaign, knocked on personally 9,000 doors in Forsyth County myself. Polo was the hardest neighborhood. Y'all have big lots and it's really hilly in here. And I did it twice. So we started knocking on doors for a May primary. We started knocking on doors in September. And I was really, I thought I was wasting my time, to be quite honest with you. And because people didn't know the election was coming up. Nobody knew who their state senator was. I was convinced they weren't going to remember me between September and May. So that's why, again, type A gets to the first week of May. I'm like, I've got to go hit Polo again. I think there's 1,200 houses in Polo. Is that right? 1150 or something. And again, it's a lot of hills. But got through Polo again. What was interesting was had a lot of people, you know, knock number two, open the door. I remember you. Hmm. And it was that was the best experience. And there were a number of moments in the process of knocking on doors. I'll share one with you. Where I was convinced I was going to lose because I was convinced that the conversation that I just had was the reason I was in the race. I walked up to a lady's driveway. And it's always awkward, right? They don't know who you are. They're not really wanting to talk to you. Let's be honest. They just want to talk to a guy knocking on your door. She's standing in the garage. I introduced myself. Hi, man. My name is Greg. I'm running for state senate. Just want to come by and introduce myself to you and see if there's anything on your mind. What we could do here in the state or in Forsyth County. And we get to talking, and I look over her shoulder, and I see a veteran's license plate. Her car's parked behind her. And I see a veteran's tag. I said, oh, man, were you a veteran? I'd like to thank you for serving if you are. I said, no, I'm not, but my husband is. And I said, oh, that's fantastic. She said, would you like to meet him? I said, I'd love to meet him. So she invites me inside, and immediately when I walk inside, I can tell something's going on. There's kind of boxes everywhere, and the house is a little disheveled. And I go in and meet her husband, who is blind and who hasn't been out of the house in years because of his condition, other than to go get medical treatment and see the doctor. He's able to sit with them for about a half hour and just kind of breathe life into them. And the only way that I knew how just was talking to them, hearing his story. He's talking about jumping out of airplanes. And really is part of, in a lot of ways, I think, a forgotten generation. People now who are, society is so easy to pass them by. And there were a number of moments like that where it's just it was just the right place, the right time. And it was really hard for me to believe, because that lady was just outside for a quick break. They told me they always keep their garage door closed. They don't answer the front door. And that was just one of those moments where I was like, this is why I'm doing this. We ended up winning the race. Some people say congratulations. Some people say condolences. And I've had the opportunity to serve now the citizens of Forsyth County for 8 months, which has been the honor of a lifetime. And I don't know how long I'll be doing it, but it's been, and I'll answer any questions about politics. Well, I don't want to dive too much into politics, because I think that, that can be an interesting conversation. But I want to read the other verse that, for me, when I was going through the process of transitioning out of the goals and the dreams of being a lawyer, and I was going to work at a church, and then I was going to be a roadie as a tour manager for this music group, as we're starting a software company that we never knew we were going to make it, it didn't make a lot of sense. And you can imagine being my parent, right? Like, here's a guy that gets 170 on his LSATs, is en route to Northwestern or Emory Law School. And now he's working at a Tuesday night Bible study. Like, not really what you thought was going to happen when you sent your kid to college, but it's what happened for me. But a verse that really captured my heart at the time and has been something that's informed my decision-making in the process is Colossians 3:17, and it says, and whatever you do, whether in word or in deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And the word there that captured my imagination was whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever you do. There's not a ton of significance in that idea about you've got to be a lawyer, you've got to be a doctor, you've got to own a business, you've got to be a teacher, you've got to be a bus driver, you've got to be a welder, you've got to be a plumber, you've got to be an HVAC guy, you've got to be a realtor. You've got to understand the principles of arbitrage, how to negotiate a deal. The idea is whatever you do. That's really simple. Whether you have a job or you don't have a job. Whether you can walk or you're in a wheelchair. Whether you're at the top 2% of people intelligence-wise, you're in the bottom 2% of people intelligence-wise. The calling is the same. And the calling is to live for a greater purpose. Right? So, I don't wake up every day and do that well. It's a journey, it's a striving. But there's been moments in my life where I have done that well. And I've recognized in those moments that I have done well, that things have gone a lot better for me. And that's all I can tell you, is that I've done it the right way and I've done it the wrong way. And the moments where I've had the wisdom or I've been lucky enough to do it the right way, things have kind of worked themselves out. And there's been moments where I haven't done it the right way, where it's been like, man, you were doing that of your own strength. That was your idea. You tried to force that through. You placed a lot of confidence in your own flesh, your own ability. And it kind of fell down around you. You made a fool of yourself in that meeting, or you didn't lead your team well on this day, or you had an opportunity to make a great first impression of somebody you didn't do. I had plenty of those moments. But when I've woken up in the morning and taken the time to say, whatever my whatever is going to be today, it's going to be towards this end. So that's kind of where I've been, how I got here. And Hines asked me to talk about lessons I've learned, but those are the lessons I think that I've learned along the way. Is really to, in a world that is focused on self, in a world that is focused on projecting something to the world, the best version of ourselves. How many people are on social media? Some capacity. I'm on social media. And it's really easy to lose sight of the fact that what people present on social media is the best 3-second snapshot of your day.
Or the worst. Right?
There are some do the worst, and I appreciate them because it makes me feel pretty good about myself sometimes. But again, in the first impression meeting, when I'm asking Norm what Norm does, if I'm not careful, I'm making a quick snap judgment about Norm. Right? And when Norm asks me about what I do, it's pretty tempting to give like the full bio. You know what I mean? I met a guy one time, first time I met him, and he told me how much money he makes within 5 minutes of meeting. And it was the most awkward thing. But I walked away from that, and he actually ended up being a political opponent of mine. And I walked away from that just kind of feeling sad for where we've come as a culture. You know? And so I think that there's a unique opportunity for men in our culture. A lot of people say, why did you get into politics? There's a lot of reasons. Ultimately, I got into politics because I think I was called to. But I think in a world that is full of this continuous cycle of opinion, criticism, opinion, criticism, opinion, criticism, because that's all that the 24-hour news cycle is. That's all that the president seems to get caught up in a lot of times. It's all the politicians seem to get caught up in. Opinion, criticism. I think in a culture that lives that reality every day, that there's an opportunity for a different tone. And there's an opportunity for people to offer a different voice to the political conversation. I've got good friends on the other side of the aisle. And we'll fight it out in the Senate. And we'll disagree vehemently. We tackled some big issues this year. I did not think, going into my first year in the Senate, that we were going to vote on abortion. That wasn't planned. It just kind of happened. Well, you talk about an opportunity to to have conversation and love people well throughout it, and an opportunity to show people that I care more about you than I care about what you think or what you're saying. You know, the house got into some pretty heated, what I would say were just mean tone. And we didn't have that in the Senate. I was pretty proud of our body. Our Senate, by the way, is led by the Lieutenant Governor, who's a Forsyth County resident, which is a pretty cool thing. He was brand new to the job, and he kind of got thrown in the lion's den as well. But I think that there's an opportunity for businesses. You look at what Chick-fil-A is doing in the midst of a culture that's full of opinion and criticism and the way that they have revolutionized the fast food industry. I get the opportunity every year to produce their annual meeting. So I'm really close to the Kathy family and the team. It's so respect and honor what they do. But I think that there is an example of a business just choosing to be different. And they do more volume per square foot than any restaurant, any fast food chain in the world. They're number 10 in units. Okay, number 10 in units. Number 3 in revenue.
Units meaning storefronts.
Storefronts. So number 10, they should be like number 9 if they're doing well, number 8 for revenue, but they're number 3 in revenue, and they're closed one day every week. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense. It defies all logic. But I think that there's something happening that behind the scenes in a spiritual realm that allows things to happen that defy all logic. So that's kind of what I wanted to share with you guys. Thank you for having me. Heinz wanted me to offer an opportunity for anybody to ask questions. I'd be happy to do that, Ron.
So I was your neighbor in Vickery Springs for 4 or 5 years. Thank you for your principal service, even before the state senate thing. Your call to this role, but I see in local, state, national politics, a lot of people view that as a career path.
Yeah.
As a way to enrich themselves, and as a way to make a life for themselves and trade on our welfare and the voters' welfare to enrich themselves.
Yeah.
Subjectively, from my point of view, it seems like that's everywhere. From your point of view, now that you're inside that machinery, how prevalent is that, and how salvageable is the local and regional political structure if people like yourself, principled servants, participate, not for self-enrichment, but because you care about the issues at hand?
Yeah.
How salvageable is that?
I think it's salvageable, but I'll tell you, I don't think it's salvageable without tournaments. And a lot of people have different views on term limits, right? People say, well, term limits, I believe in term limits because I think they happen every 2 years, every 4 years, every 6 years in the ballot box. But the incumbency is really, really powerful.
Because of the feedback loop of the money.
The feedback loop of the money. So we have a 2-year term in the Georgia State Senate, which I think is crazy, which means in January of 2020, and we can't raise money while we're in session. My race cost about $300,000 for a small local race. We put $100,000 of our family money into that. We raised the rest. So that immediately eliminates the ability for a lot of people to even consider that as an option. The second thing that eliminates a lot of people from being able to consider it as an option is in the Senate side, or in the state side, you're gone from January until April. You can kind of kiss whatever you do goodbye because you're down at the Capitol. Which for me, to get ahead of traffic, looks like leaving at 5:30 in the morning and getting home about 7 o'clock at night. And doing that 4 or 5 days a week. So you can't be engaged in business. And if you're an employee, there's no employers going to deal with that. We have the shortest, Georgia has the shortest legislative session of any state in the union. It's 40 days. They milk it for all sorts of committee days and budget days. They spread it out. But even with the shortest legislative day, there's really 3 types of people down there. There's lawyers or insurance guys or people who I would say in some way can actively benefit from being a rep or a senator. Their name's on a billboard and it helps kind of both worlds. There's retired folks. And there's independently wealthy folks who come from money who, let me ginger about how I say this, whose parents want them to be governor.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a couple of us that are kind of actively involved in industry who are not kind of done financially, who go back to get home at 7 o'clock at night and have to go check a different email than the government email address. Mm-hmm. At the federal level, I think it's so toxic because, let me get back to the term limit thing. 2-year term, which means that you get done in April, of this year, and you potentially have a primary in May of next year. So you're constantly thinking about the next election. It's natural, right? Which prevents people from taking the risk and doing what they do because they're afraid of getting primary. If they're a Democrat, they're afraid of getting primary from the left. If they're a Republican, they're afraid of getting primary from the right. And if they're in a swing district, they're afraid of both of those things and general election. So it creates this problem. So my solution to that problem is I term limit myself to 8 years. Because I think it's enough time. If I can't do what I want to do in 8 years, somebody else needs to come and give it a shot. I'm introducing legislation this year to introduce term limits, but I want to introduce term limits and change the term to 4 years. Because I want to get people out of the cycle of being afraid of their re-election. And then years 1 and 2, none of them, by the way, want term limits. So my carrot for term limits, the carrot attached to the stick, is the 4-year term. Because they would all love that. I don't think it's going to go over that well, but we'll see what happens. The national level, it's even worse because there's more money, there's more power, there's more influence. And if you look at these politicians, they go in poor, they come out rich. Mm-hmm. You can't explain. It's a $170,000 a year job. The problem to me, I think, started because the United States Congress used to be like us. They used to be in session 40 days a year up until 1913. And if you look at when things really started going haywire, it's when politicians were up there full time to push the wacky ideas, whether it's on the left or the right.
Which requires that it be a career, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of hope at the local level, because I think the states are always incubators for new ideas. I think it's easier to move the needle. I think that we as state reps are naturally more connected to the community, and we feel then more of the pressure. I'll answer the other part of your question this way. There's no promise that the United States of America is going to have a 300th birthday, or a 400th birthday, or a 500th birthday. In my opinion, if you look at where we're at compared to where we started, I worry about how long this can last. If you look at the tone and the kind of division that's in the country, I'm worried about the next decade, obviously, and what could happen if we become more fractured. So thank you for the question.
Well, I like to ask a question and kind of already answered it, but you're one of the younger guys in the room, I'd say. I remember watching Eisenhower on the Black and White television, so I've been around a bit, watched some of this stuff. Knowing where it is today, what, in your opinion, you're at the state level,
yep.
you know our congressional leaders, what's going to fix it? Because if, in my opinion, if they don't start talking about not the what, but the so what is the outcome? All these folks in here have been business people. That's what we ran business on. What is the outcome? We don't see that. Your comment about opinion criticism, it is killing this country. You use the words left, liberal, or conservative. What about the middle? What about being Americans? You can disagree. But I tell you, we're on a path of destruction. So I'd like, that sounds doom and gloom, but you just said it yourself. Where's it going? What's going
to
fix it?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. You know, I suspect that if I would have been alive in the 60s and 70s, I would have had the same concerns that I have today, right? You had a fractured country. You had people burning flags. You had people who were really opposed to what America stood for. In a similar way, what we have, that's great. The heart of the fraction today, I think, is a question of what do you believe at its core that America is what's right with the world or America is what's wrong with the world, right? That's kind of the question. And so you've got people that want to fundamentally transform America, and you've got people that say, you know what, we've got our issues, there's plenty of them, I could write down 50 of them, but I think we've done a lot of things right. I think we're overall a force for good. I don't know the answer to that, because going back to Eisenhower, if you look at what the Second World War did in particular is it brought our country together. And heaven forbid if we have to have another world war for our country to come together. But we have seen unifying moments like that, right? 9/11 was a unifying moment. We haven't had too many of them since then, unfortunately. But in my opinion, a big part of the issue is what's happening in our schools and the way that we're educating the next generation, the way we educated my generation. So that's a problem. We actually passed a bill this year to have a civics test upon high school graduation that mimics the civics test that people take if they want to become a citizen. Because people think we're a democracy, we're not. We're a representative republic. People think people couldn't tell you what rights are enshrined in the First Amendment. They just think it's the freedom of speech. It's not. It's more than that. They probably couldn't tell you what the Fourth Amendment is. And honestly, some of us probably couldn't tell each other what the Fourth Amendment is. So we've lost touch with really what our founders were so in touch with. And I think that oftentimes it's tragedy, tension, fear, or crisis that causes people to say, this is optional, to your left-right point, and this is optional. But the survival of our country is a necessity. So I don't know, because I don't know what challenges we're going to face as a nation. But I think that some of those challenges may present the opportunity for leaders to emerge who want to unite people around that idea of we're Americans. And I think that right now, the tenor and the tone of the rhetoric is so crazy that I think people sitting around their kitchen tables have that conversation. But the worst thing to happen to politics is the 24-hour news cycle. That's the worst thing that's happened, because it's become theater. And so when something becomes theater, it attracts actors. And it doesn't attract the serious minds anymore. It attracts, you know, people that want to be a celebrity.
So. Greg, just a quick thought following this. Do you think a ubiquitous change of world view that comes from the heart, which comes from the spirit, would be the path to bring America together in a calmer, gentler, more reasonable
state? No question. No question. I think that, in fact, our congressman here, you all share the same congressman that I do, Rob Woodall, is resigning. So a lot of the prospective candidates have kind of, you know, come and made their ceremonial visit to me to ask for my support. And when we get past the pleasantries, the first question that I ask them, which I think is the most important question you can ask anybody who's running for office, is tell me what's your worldview.
Yeah.
And as it relates to politics, what do you think is the role of government in the lives of people? And when I hear them answer that question, I can tell you how they're going to vote on about 98% of the issues. Similarly, when you ask somebody, what's your worldview about who are we and why are we here? And your answer to that question, I think, will tell me 98% of what you'll do when you're faced with a decision in your life. And the answer to that question, who are we and why are we here, as a culture, we answer that fundamentally differently than we did 50 years ago. And if you want to point to a singular shift, in my opinion, of where we've been, where we are, and where we're going, you ask the next generation, or who are you and why are you here? And I think you'll have the answer to where we're headed.
You pray about getting into politics. You've made a difference in business, in your faith. But do you feel like you're making a difference in politics?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
Is there hope?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'll tell you a couple things. One, when you go down there, you're called a freshman, right? And you're treated like you'd be treated as a freshman in any place of higher ed. And so you get hazed, and you've got people that have been there for 30 plus years. And they've seen every young whippersnapper coming through the door who's going to change the Gold Dome or change Washington or do whatever. So they've seen the movie before. So if you kind of go in there guns blazing, if I've got all the answers, I'm going to fix this place, you can lose influence pretty quick. So I had sought wise counsel. People who had been there, done that before I went down there. That was the biggest piece of advice that they gave me, was listen. Go down there and listen. Which is not the typical tone of anybody who had a contested Senate race in the state of Georgia. I got more votes than every single one of them. So the temptation is to go down there and say, look, Forsyth County is a power player now. We gave Brian Kemp and Jeff Duncan one-third of their statewide margin of victory. I got more votes than all of you. You could go in that way, and I've seen people do that. So I didn't say a word in a caucus meeting until about day 12. The first thing I did was ask a question. The first time I ever went to the well, it was on Shine a Light on Slavery Day, and I went to talk about human trafficking. and the 27 million people in the world who are caught up in sex slavery and labor slavery, indentured servitude, particularly in India and Haiti, and told the story of a girl in our community who had been sold by her father into sex slavery, locked up in a dog cage, taken out only to be sold by her father. Because I wanted the first thing that I did in the well of the Senate to advocate the cause of somebody else and to shine a light on something that's an injustice in our world that all of us can do something about. But after that, there were really two big issues. I carried a school choice bill this year, and it was my first opportunity to kind of go toe-to-toe in debate. It was a 30-minute debate. The debate's limited to 30 minutes. And after that, we had two big issues. There was the bill I mentioned earlier, the life bill, and then there was a bill for what voting machines we're going to use. That became a really divisive issue. We dealt with both of those at the end of the session. And after the human trafficking thing and the school choice debate, our leadership asked me to make the closing arguments on both of those controversial bills for our caucus. So I made the closing argument on the life bill and the closing argument on the voting machine bill. So it was a little glimpse for me of being able to take maybe a soft bite off of having some influence. But I think it's going to probably take every bit of the first 4 years to get to a position where you're kind of at the adult table. You know, we're dealing with trying to get Post Road widened. They're not scheduled to widen it all the way to Highway 20 until 2037. Crazy, right? My second grader will be, you know, long out of school. They're not planning on doing the portion from Highway 9 to Kelly Mill. They're planning to start until 2028, which means it won't be done, best case scenario, until 2030. So we've suffered because we've had a number of senators in and out, a number of state reps in and out. But I spent the week on the phone this week with GDOT Commissioner, our DOT rep, our DOT engineer, and in the conversations I had, what struck me was the approach with humility of coming in quietly, but then letting other people call me forward as opposed to pushing myself forward has already resulted in influence to where our GDOT board members, like, I'm talking to the commissioner this week, I'll get back to you on Monday. This is unacceptable. We're going to move the needle on this. We'll see what fruit that bears over time. I think we're going to know a lot within the next 2 or 3 months. But I think that's the dividend that will be paid by treating people well, coming in and listening first, that kind of thing. As far as like wide scale difference, I don't know that you do that until you get to the national scale, right? And I don't know yet. I have no idea. I'm going to run for re-election. I'm going to be in for at least 4 years if I win. But I don't know that. I might do 4 years and be done completely. I don't know. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of stress. And people ask me, I like it. I like 85% of it. But there's a lot of it where you're like, there's some days where you come home and you're like, man, why am I doing this? Yeah. I had a pretty good life, you know? So.
Barry, I've heard you speak, I don't know, maybe several times now. And every time I hear you, when I get through, I feel better than I did when I got that.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for what you're doing because, like you said, you don't have to do this. And I believe you're doing it for the right reasons.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, I'd love to pray over you guys if we can, just to close it up. And thank you again for having me. Father, I thank you for these men. I thank you for the leadership they provide in their families. I pray for their marriages. You would show each of us how to love our wives well. You would show us how to love our children well. You allow us to learn from them. You allow us to recognize them as gifts and to enjoy them. To not be combative, to not strive, to not push, but to enjoy them as the gifts that they are. Thank you for the opportunity to serve you through industry. For those of us who are involved in business, for those of us who are working, God, I pray that we do what we do every day as if we're doing it unto you. We recognize that you are our boss, that we would find glory in being excellent at what we do. But we would pursue excellence not for our own egos, but so that we would be a light to a world that's yearning for people to do things excellently. I pray for our hearts, God, that we would find the opportunity to spend time with you. Pray for those of us that struggle with stress and anxiety. Pray for those of us that struggle with a search and a longing for significance. that we would find our identity in you, not in what we do. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to this man, God. I pray that you would continue to allow this group to be a place that people come and share and are open, and that we would find peace and rest in these days. In your name we pray. Amen. Amen.
The other thing I would say, maybe to follow up on Greg's talk, which was awesome, when you have these the meetings, what do they call them, where you guys gather together and you talk about issues, the
caucus meetings?
Yeah, just the public meetings.
Oh, town halls?
Town halls, yeah. Go there, and you'll see people that agree with you, people that don't agree with you, and you'll see how people like Greg that are in leadership handle it. And I heard one of the best defenses of life at conception by Greg at one of the ones that I attended over at some middle school or something. So, and also to get to know people that don't agree with you. I think one of the challenges is when we're not talking to each other but we don't like each other, we'll never like each other. And I applaud people that are radically different from me in their views. Because, John, you fought to give us that right. Men and women of the service have given their lives so we could say goofy things, right? Or good things. And both ought to be defended as a right, a privilege in our nation. So, great job, and appreciate you being here. So, If you want to head on out now, and we'll.
Thank you.
Great, thank you.
If y'all ever need anything, my cell phone's on my website, and I put on Facebook all over the place too. So you can call me. It's always with you, Texas. Thanks for having me.
Great, thank you, Greg.